Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Friday, November the 3rd, 2017. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And welcome, everybody. Honored that once again you're with us to share this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and the implications of being able to change the root of the output of the mind. Yesterday we talked a little bit about David Bohm and some of the things he has to say as a physicist. And one of the most interesting pieces of the puzzle that David gives us is he makes this comment that what we think shows up in consciousness or arrives in consciousness as a show. In other words, our thinking literally creates the world that we see. And as Dr. Tim has pointed out and brought to our attention with video information, in particular from a neuropsychologist, we actually watched this as part of the intensive. A gentleman named Anil Seth does a TED talk where he puts forward the information as a neurobiologist that no light goes into the brain, no sound goes into the brain, yet we think we hear light or see sound and hear see sound. Right, okay. Anyway, our metaphor's mixed here. We think we see light and we hear sounds, and yet this is all an interpretation of the brain, making what Anil calls its best guess. David Bohm's a little more specific. He says that our thoughts make a show in consciousness. In other words, one example he uses, if I think you're separate from me, then you show up as a separate being in my mind. And the implications of forgiveness, the implications of being able to remove thoughts that show up in our minds as a world of trauma and pain are enormous. To remove the root of our own trauma, to literally be able to access what underlies and replace what underlies our perceptual world with something different. And of course, the question might become, well, Michael, what different thing would you replace that with? You know, I mean, that's what we have. We all have the thinking that we've all done, the thinking that our generations have done. How could it be different? Well, if we go to the Aramaic language of Yeshua, we hear a teaching in Matthew 5 that talks about what was called the Beatitudes. And we're told that each of those Beatitudes starts out with a word, or actually the Greeks speak of it as a series of words in Aramaic. It's a single word. The Greeks translate that word as blessed are they, but in Aramaic the word tuvehun literally speaks of a neural structure, a thought structure. That word, the first part of the word in Aramaic is tuvehun. The word tuv, T-O-U-V, is a neural structure or an attitude of mind. And what Yeshua is instructing on in that teaching, as opposed to a philosophy about a nice way of being, the Beatitudes, rather, he's actually speaking about a set of instructions for activating a neural structure that is implanted by humans but has been rendered unconscious. That is, has been relegated to the unconscious mind because it has been layered over with generations and generations and generations of hostility and fear. You know, Bohm talks about thought as a system, and he says, we have no idea when this system started. It's been going on for so long, and this unconscious thought system, based in hostility or fear for most, has become the root of the output of the mind. We're looking and working to change that game, to elevate to a level where the root of the output of the mind, no matter who we look at, no matter what we experience, no matter what we do, is based in this neural structure that was designed for you. What Yeshua says in that word tuvehun, in essence, is a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being will become your conscious possession. So we are literally looking to replace the thought structures of a world based in hostility or fear, to replace that with this neural structure that the Creator put in us, literally to guide us to happiness and well-being. You know, we hear so many people talking about, you know, why does God allow such terrible things to happen in the world? And as though the Creator has something to do with it. You know, this is a reason a lot of people reject the whole idea of a Creator. It's like, well, you know, no loving Creator would ever allow free will and people to do what they choose to do. Well, that wouldn't happen. The Creator would step in and stop it. Well, not if the Creator says, okay, you've got free will, use it as you choose. And that our thought system has been so degraded by generation upon generation upon generation of hostility and fear. And, you know, you look at that story in the Old Testament, it's going back, what, 3,000 years or so, and you hear about this group of people who escapes from Egypt and they get lost in the desert for a period of 40 years. And, you know, when you think about a bright group of people like this being lost in a 30-square-mile area for that long, you start to realize that's a pretty ludicrous idea. But when you really apply understanding of all of these facts, then you recognize that this desert is a state called the unconscious. And that unconscious neural structures based in hostility or fear, by and large, govern the average person's life and mind. And we didn't start out that way. You know, if you hold a newborn child, you realize you didn't start out that way. We didn't start out in the world distrusting and hateful and fearful and prejudiced and racist and all the things that are going on in the world today, sexist and abusive. It doesn't exist in the newborn energy. But when these generational thought patterns based in hostility or fear become activated, then the tendency is for most people to get trapped in that And applying David Bohm's understanding that these thoughts turn into pictures in the mind, he calls it a show of consciousness, that we convert this digital energy called thought into the world of pictures. And the world of pictures, we have no idea, is a reflection of the activity of the content of the mind. We actually think we're looking out through our eyes and seeing it outside of us, never for a moment suspecting that the eye is a one-way valve that allows information in. Doesn't allow, it's not a window. You can't see out of your eye. It's not possible. You know, you can even go to the CIA and check out their book on the study of intelligence. It's on their website, free, CIA.gov. Study of intelligence. Go download it. Read the book. And even the CIA very carefully says, the mind does not record reality. The mind generates it. The world you see, the world of perception, is based on your thought systems. And if we bought into generational thought systems of hostility or fear, then we literally, quite literally, live in a desert of consciousness where most people thirst for the one scintilla of the active presence of love. And we're told in that ancient story that seems to be kind of archaic and silly, we're told the truth about consciousness. And we hear the instruction that says that the way this group of people got out of this desert, this state of consciousness, not a 30 square mile area in the Sinai, the way they got out was for the old generation to be removed. So the old generation has to die off. They were not talking about people in old physical bodies that had to go before another group of people could physically move out of the desert. And the promise was that if you undo these generational patterns, then you get to move into what was called the Promised Land. Is that a place just over the hill? No. It's a place where you literally think out of the neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being, and you are, by your perceptual system and the world you see, guided into happiness and well-being, freed from the desert of hostility and fear. And yet, most people look at these pictures in their minds having no idea that those pictures in their minds are generated based on their thoughts, and they actually believe, they massage those thoughts into pictures that convince them that they're actually looking outside themselves and that they are feeling as a result of something outside of themselves rather than feeling as a result of what's moving within them. The action of forgiveness, and, you know, it's not a short-term project. It's not a project for wimps. The action of forgiveness is it step by step, day by day, you apply the tool of forgiveness to incapacitate yourself to perceive out of hostility or fear. That you literally, consciously, purposely, step by step, day by day, choose to link into, to connect to, and to take responsibility for staying connected to the active presence of love. And by so doing, your perceptual world shifts from not a physical location, but from a world based in thoughts structured out of hostility or fear to a world structured out of a mind connected to and based in love. The game changes dramatically. But it does require that every time you clench your fist, every time you hold your breath, every time you clench your jaw or grind your teeth, you stop and you go, ah, this is about something moving inside of me. How do I apply forgiveness to this situation to get freed of this pain or trauma that I am sure, because my mind showed me that it was caused by my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, my spouse, my child, or maybe even by that person in the mirror. Certainly leads to a different way of thinking. And we choose to think as human beings, the whole game changes. So that's what we are here to support you in understanding and putting to work in your life and to applying the tools of forgiveness to literally collapse the perceptual world based in hostility or fear. Now, of course, you can't do that if you believe that you're looking at something outside of you and that what you're feeling is caused by something outside of you. If you have this instant irritation response, if you have this instant grr that you're always pointing at the world, if you have this instant negativity that's playing out continuously, and you go, look what they did to me. Look how they upset me. Look, if only you'd have been different, I wouldn't have to feel this way. Excuse me? Your feelings are happening as a result of what's moving inside of you, not as a result of what's moving outside of you. Climbing out of the desert is no easy feat. It is literally the question of the ages. Expect to take a little time to understand and a little time to do the work. Actually, I could turn both of those statements into a lot of time. It's a major project. But shifting from a world based in hostility or fear to one where you rediscover the truth of who you are and you live out of that truth is a whole different game. And we're here to support you playing that new game. And Jeannie, I heard you say that Dr. Tim is with us. Let's say hello to the young man and see if he has anything to share with us.
Hello.
Hey there, sir. How are you?
What state are you in now?
We are in the state of confusion. No. We're actually in Virginia. We're in Williamsburg, Virginia. Just arrived here about 7 o'clock last night. We got several hours with Billy Eastman at 96 years of age in Yellow Springs, Ohio. We did a little detour down through Ohio and spent the night in Yellow Springs. It was actually kind of funny. She invited us. She's actually at 96 now in an assisted care facility, but she still has her family home. And she invited us to stay in her home, and we said, sure, that would be great. We were going to get a hotel as we drove on toward Williamsburg. And so we spent the night there and then had the next morning with her. But when we got there, I mean, it was 32 degrees, and the room we were in was cold. Oh, man, blankets. We piled up about 5 blankets. We didn't discover till the next morning that someone had left the windows open. So we slept in a room that was probably, 45 degrees, honey? It was cold. Lord Jeannie says more like 35. So it was an interesting night and reminded me of some of my early days up in Canada. You know, my parents, we had oil heat in our home when I was a kid, and my parents were deathly afraid of fires from oil space heaters. That's what we had to heat our house. And so last thing at night, they'd turn off the oil heater, and it was off all night. And it was always my mother's job to get up in the morning and light it. But there were some cold nights, and so I got a reminder of what cold nights were, and it wasn't until the next morning we opened the door. Oh, my God, the window! No wonder we couldn't get the place warmed up. The windows were open. But it was an interesting night and a nice visit with Billy. It was just awesome to have some time with her. And this is she's quite a lady. She's still teaching A Course in Miracles. She's still working on creating and on motivating the U.S. government to create a Department of Peace to balance. That way, she did a little interview where she talked about, you know, there's two sides to everything, that we need to have a balancing side to the Department of War creating a Department of Peace. So pretty interesting to see somebody so vital and so still so alive, engaged. She still has a helper who comes out to her assisted care living facility, takes her out to her home, and she still works in the garden, grows flowers and vegetables, and so it's pretty amazing lady.
Wonderful.
But we're now in Virginia. Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, we had our support group here last night and had some very loving, willing people, and we did what we could to watch more of the Aramaicisms, but there's a snafu with the technology on that DVD, and my DVD player just won't play it. So we got to watch the first 2 hours. I'm sure you'll say you've never had that problem mentioned before, but we went around this. They actually, the people at the fulfillment department contacted me and said, why don't you send those back to us, and then we'll send you a new one. Well, I never got around to making a special trip to the delivery store to have them sent back. I ended up one time being able to get it to play at the church. But here at my office last night, everything I could think of was a no-go. So we got to see the first 2 hours over the past couple of weeks, but we didn't get the third and fourth hour. And so then
we'll send you out a new video, Tim, and they probably want that one back because that's all new technology, and we haven't had any problem with that. We have had some problems with some of the other videos, but not that one at all.
Okay, well, that's an issue for another time, but we ended up having a discussion of, so what's being read by people in the group. So we talked a little bit about 10 things that dead people want you to know, and a little bit about Michael Singer's newest book, The Surrender Experiment. And then we processed more about what happened in the worksheet on Tuesday's group, and then we had discussion. So it was a lovely meeting, and again, my gratitude for people who choose to do the work and who are committed to keeping the focus on themselves whenever they're upset or sad or confused, because that's, as the ancient teachings say, the only way out is through. And if I've got pain or fear or sadness inside of me, the only way for me to get rid of it is to go inside of me and dismantle that energy. So that was lovely, and I've just been doing the work and seeing patients and getting ready for Saturday and Sunday, because on Sunday I'm giving the talk at the Unitarian Universalist Church in McHenry. So it's a full weekend of presentations and appearances.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, we've got a friend that I think is going to come tomorrow. She may be on the show today that we've actually introduced to you previously, that I'm hoping we'll be following through, even though we've changed our plan and I'm not going to be flying into Chicago, so I won't be at that conference. But we hope that she'll get to connect with you and learn more about the Beamer. We've talked to her about it, and so we'll make sure that if she does follow through and go, that you guys make that connection.
All right. Well,
awesome. Well, Jeannie, do we have anybody with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Nobody has their hand up. And I was actually just talking to Kathy, and since a hand just went up. However, let me finish this thought. She is meeting with a group. She meets with every Sunday, and they do some meditation, and then they dig deep into life. And she said this Sunday that they're going to work on the purpose statement, and did I have any suggestions on guiding them. And one of the strongest things that I found when I actually changed my purpose statement was the exercise that we did during the intuitive development intensive, and that was where people partnered and sat across from each other, and one closed their eyes, and the other person would continuously ask, "Who are you?" And they would give one-word answers like, you know, "I'm a mother," and then they'd say, "Who will?" Say, you know, "I'm a daughter." And, "Well, who are you?" "I'm a wife." "Who are you?" "I'm Jeannie." "Well, who are you?" "I'm, you know, light." "Who are you?" "I'm love." And it just kept going until you had like a whole page of answers. And then ask a second question, "Why are you here?" And things would come out like, you know, "To teach, to learn, to love, to support," different things like that. And so the person that continually asks the questions writes down the other person's answer so they'll have it in writing afterwards. And then they switch places and the other person asks the questions. And to me, that was a really powerful foundation then to turn around and work on the purpose statement, because with your eyes closed, just answering the question, "Who are you and why are you here?" You know, after you got past the surface stuff of, "I'm a wife and I'm a daughter and my name's Jeannie," then you get into, you know, "Who am I really and why am I here?" And so I was suggesting that she do that exercise with her group, since she has 2 hours with them, and then walk them through doing the purpose worksheet that's on the website. So that was the conversation in the chat room, and we do have a hand up, and it's area code 610. You're on the air.
Hello, Michael. You hear me all right?
Hey there, young lady. You're loud and clear. How are you today?
Oh, good. I'm okay, and thank you so much for the work. I did the worksheet on the sleep problem and the childhood memory thing. By the way, your presentation today was out of sight great. Just amazing. The Beatitudes, I've never heard that, never thought of it that way. Also the thing about the brain, how we don't really see anything. We're just creating interpretations of what comes in through an eye that isn't a window, et cetera. Anyway, thanks so much.
Delighted.
Back to that other thing, the worksheet. I was doing the one on having stoned that stingray. And the goal that I was giving up, and this was confusing to me, so I wanted to clarify it with you, giving up the goal of being able to undo what I did as a child. And I'm not sure I understood the goal part. I have a new goal that I think is good, but I wanted to check that other one first with you. If you can remember that, do you need more stuff or?
Oh, no. I remember it perfectly. That was an interesting conversation, and I could, you know, imagine at least a dozen or two dozen different worksheets you could do around that. I hadn't thought of the one of wanting to be able to undo that, but that's going to take you into some powerful stuff, probably stuff based in powerlessness. And, you know, there's a, you know, in our Healing Through Relationships workshop, I have a section that I do where I offer the three magic words with which to destroy relationship, with which relationships are killed. And that is, "You made me." And
yeah,
most people, based on hearing the words "you made me," have a whole series of files that they've hidden from themselves about being to blame, being at fault, being hopeless, helpless. And so I would think that particular worksheet might really open some deep connections. And you know, we've talked before about the Hydra worksheet, where, you know, the Hydra is a creature in Greek mythology that when you cut her head off, a dozen other heads appear. And as
right,
you go through one piece, you're likely to find other pieces of the same puzzle that will lead to, you know, deeper contact with those hidden parts of the mind. So that's a powerful powerful goal to work with.
So when you said that there was a goal, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm waiting.
Okay. When you said there was, I don't think we ever created a goal, but I stoned this stingray. I feel terrible about it, felt terrible about it, remembered back as a child doing that, wishing I had been more conscious but I can't undo it. And my goal,
right.
I think, has been that I undo it, that I undo it, that it did not happen. Well, it did happen. And
right.
So maybe I just named the goal just then, trying to undo it so it didn't happen.
Right.
And but what I wrote down was to forgive myself for what I did as a child. And I haven't done
well,
that yet, but the only, yeah.
Well, remember that forgiveness, you know, we've been taught a fraud about forgiveness, that forgiveness is about forgiving someone or forgiving ourselves. And
mm-hmm.
that act where I let myself off the hook, gee, I did something that was terrible, that I feel badly about, that I now cannot undo, would be properly
mm-hmm.
called pardoning, not forgiveness.
Yeah, okay.
So I can choose to, you know, I can say, well, you know, that was a long time ago. I had a different mind. And so now I can pardon myself for that. The forgiveness work would be more aligned with, let's say, as you look at that particular goal, would be perhaps to tap into the mindset that you had at that time that allowed you to stone this creature as it lay on the beach helpless. And to forgive in yourself the mindset that allowed you to do such a thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
where was I at 6 years of age that I could take this creature and, you know, where did that thinking come from that allowed me to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And to work to alleviate yourself of any traces of that mindset that could ever happen again in your eternal life.
Oh, and I bet I haven't. Yeah, because I still get mad at people and stuff. And so that's the basic thing.
At least your
it?
Mind tells you get mad at people.
Yeah.
You've
okay.
never ever gotten mad at anybody, but certainly if there's mad in there, we can get a whole series of people who can come along and trigger it for us, and we say, I'm mad because Charlie did this and because Bill did that.
Right.
I'm not mad because Charlie did anything. I'm mad because I got mad in me and Charlie's behavior
mm-hmm.
triggered it, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's the forgiveness of the mad that I want to do.
Mm-hmm. How many times have you said that? And I'm still working on it.
So am I.
So I said
so am I.
Yeah. I set as a healing that I would be especially kind. In the worksheet, it says something like, I replace my original faulty goal with this new enlightened goal, to be especially kind to all beings. Animals, plants, insects. I'm not killing any ants anymore that I can help. I know accidentally I have, but I've been sweeping them with a gentle, tiny broom into my compost heap. And it does feel better, and there are some around, and I've been talking to them, and they're going. But that's a good goal, right? To replace
that's,
my faulty goal with that one?
Saul's right on track, but you might want to go back and check out the worksheet. You've inserted
yeah.
a word there that isn't on the worksheet. There's nothing on the worksheet
okay.
about a faulty goal.
Okay.
Nothing about a faulty goal. You know, I can have a perfectly wonderful, awesome, fabulous, appropriate, functional goal to be gentle
mm-hmm.
with animals. Nothing faulty about that goal when I cancel it.
Yeah.
And so it is. You'll notice that the worksheet says the constructive result that I want in this situation,
mm-hmm.
my goal. So
mm-hmm.
I'm looking for what was the wondrous, wonderful thing that I held that I wanted out of this situation. There's nothing faulty about it. So you don't cancel the goal because there's any fault in the goal. You cancel the goal because when you load it in your mind, it resonates or recruits into perception something based in hostility or fear. We could load that goal in 1,000 other minds and things would rock and everything would be wonderful. Or yeah. I have a goal that, you know, that if I offered it to you, you'd say, Michael, that's a great goal, and I put it into my mind, and my mind comes up with rage. I cancel the goal not because there's anything wrong with the goal. I cancel the goal because it happens to recruit something in me that causes my perception to be faulty. And I want to remove what degrades my perception, and that's what the forgiveness process is about.
Okay, I'm going to write that down. Yep, okay, degrades.
Perception based in hostility and fear is always degraded. It comes from corrupt data. The hostility and fear are the signal that there's corrupt data being used to build this perception.
Okay.
And I collapse it by looking at the driver, the wonderful goal that I hold, that recruits that aberrant content.
Mm-hmm.
And the effectiveness is that when I locate just the right goal that takes me into the file that contains that aberrant content, when I cancel the goal, the surface mind's perception collapses into the depth of that file with the aberrant content in it. And I now have access directly to the dissociated aberrant content in my own mind. So let's imagine a scenario. A six-year-old on the beach sees dad throw perfectly beautiful creature up on the sand, and the child perceives it as ugly and stones it to death. What might be the aberrant content under that? Well, you know, maybe I watched a television show where somebody looked at another person and called them ugly names and vicious things and beat them. And I took on a belief that if something to me is ugly, then I have every right to be vicious and harmful to it. And I want to forgive that from my structure. And maybe, you know, that belief or that thought came from something 10 generations back in my bloodline, and this particular circumstance happens to bring that content forward. And so anytime that hostility or fear shows up in my perception, I collapse it by canceling the wonderful goal, the constructive result that I want, and that's what gives me contact with the hidden, dissociated parts of the mind.
Mm. Good. Good.
It is good. It's a wonderful thing to understand about the mind. And, you know, when I think about this genius coming up with that piece of information 2,000 years ago, it's like, whoa.
That's amazing.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, Michael, last night I went downtown to see a movie called I Am Not Your Negro, James Baldwin.
You know, I ordered that movie and they didn't send it to me. I've still tried to get a hold of it. I heard of it recently.
Oh, my God. Well, it is a look at the three murders. Medgar Evers, I think his name was,
Evers,
and Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X. All three workers for social justice rights for blacks.
Yes.
Looking at it from James Baldwin's point of view, he was writing a novel about this or a book about it when he died, and a filmmaker gathered all his stuff and put together this documentary, which is absolutely astounding. And there was a little panel afterwards. We had some talking afterwards, two black folks and a white person. And most of the audience were white, because most of us who went to it want to correct generations of mistreatment of blacks and coloreds and all sorts of things. And this is our way of doing it. It was extremely powerful, extremely upsetting. And talk about, I mean, stoning a stingray. I'm not saying this is worse. In fact, it isn't. It's, I think, all murder is probably on the same level. But there was so much injustice, so much prejudice. And as a child, I was alive. I remember seeing Time magazine and Life magazine with pictures of lynchings and hangings. And I would look at those pictures, and I wasn't getting it. I remained unconscious. I looked at them and thought they were terrible, but I didn't associate it with human beings being hurt, humans like me. I didn't associate it with injustice. I just simply looked. And I didn't really wake up to racism being brought up in a Massachusetts white city until I was riding my bike one day, and I noticed in a city in Boston, and I noticed a little tiny black boy standing on the corner without any parent in sight. I went up to him and said, "Where's your mother?" And I got right down at his level. I knelt down, and he spit in my face. And I thought to myself, what have we done to black people that this tiny child with no information of his own would do that to me? Is it because I'm white? Is it because I'm white? And I thought it was, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe you're not supposed to talk to strangers. I don't know, but my thought was, oh, man, I am so guilty, and I was so sorry for that tiny little man. And I got up on my bike, and I rode away in kind of terror and realized I still left him on the corner. I hope his mother was around. But that's I didn't wake up till I was about 18 years old, and I'm still waking up to the extent of white privilege, the extent of the systemic illness, horrific. And one of the black women got up at the end of the film and said, "Do not separate good whites from bad whites. Make that all one group, please." And then she said, "And do not demonize Donald Trump or anyone else." Well, you've never taught demonizing either. She wanted us to own the darkness so that we can collapse the crap and see the origin. I mean, just what you've been saying. And I've been thinking about how do we go from here? This is so massively pervasive, and the clips of angry white Christians slaying blacks, it's just
so-called white Christians.
I mean, at one point, a couple of us were just doubled. Excuse me, what'd you say?
No Christianity there.
No, I agree. I was saying, but this is, they think there, and even one white woman saying, "God doesn't allow this, but God certainly doesn't like blacks and doesn't want them in this country. God, God is a weapon. You're going to, I mean, you better have a martini before you watch this movie, Michael." But in any case, no, don't have a martini. I know I'm going up a bad road there.
I won't probably ever be having another martini, thank you. Well, actually, I've never had one, but...
I had a few sips of one, and it went right, I fell over. It went right to my head. Anyway, just, I was thinking of you as we were watching this, and how, I mean, you're a tender person. You were crying over a bunch of tiny kids who were so poor that they didn't have coats. I remember that story very well. You were telling how it upset you that you had to, people had to go out and buy jackets for them. And here's this film. I don't know. You just better get a good night's sleep beforehand and take a few deep breaths and keep breathing during it. It's just too
take
much.
Worksheet.
But it made me, oh, it's going to take so many worksheets. Oh, my God. So this is neither here nor there, except that our whole country needs so many worksheets.
Yeah. Well, if you want to do, you know, to me, films become a very powerful space to show us what we've hidden from ourselves. And there are a couple of other films that you might want to get a hold of and watch. There's one called The James Mink Story. And another one called The Vernon Johns Story. Now, I forget, I believe it was James Mink. You know, I'm a Canadian, and this movie was particularly shocking to me. James Mink was a businessman in Canada who was actually running for mayor of Toronto, happened to be a black man. Mm-hmm. And I may have, these are both true stories, and I may have the names mixed up. It's been a while since I've seen these films. The other one is The Vernon Johns Story. But I think it was James Mink who was
James
running.
Canada.
yeah, was running for mayor of Toronto, and he had a very beautiful daughter, and he was looking, as people did back in those days, for a husband for her. And a man from the United States showed up presenting himself as an integritous businessman and sort of wooed this guy and married his daughter, took her to the United States, and sold her into slavery.
Oh,
and
God.
James Mink decided that he was going to go and rescue his daughter. And the shock for me, you know, just, you know, it's just a little line across the country from between, you know, that calls one side of it Canada and the other side of the United States. But being brought up in Canada, it was a shock for me to watch this man have to go under the guise of being the slave of his wife. He was married to a white woman back in 1800s, and he had to go under the guise of being her slave to get into the United States and not be captured and taken into slavery.
Oh my God.
He ended up with his wife slinking around the United States to find his daughter and recapture her and take her back home. And, you know, just you talk about shocking to the conscience, shocking to the capacity of the mind to even conceive that such a thing is possible. But there are two other films that will be will bring this up for you and give you other opportunities to learn forgiveness. 12 Years a Slave is another bizarre true story that actually was in the theaters recently. And this was a man who was a fairly well-known musician in, I forget where, he was in Boston or somewhere, and he, you know, some guys got him drunk and took him south, and for 12 years he was taken into slavery. And, you know, these things are just like shocks to the conscience and opportunities for each of us to look at any prejudice that we have and undo those prejudices and start to live differently. Another one that was shocking, Jeannie and I just went to see, oh, this is probably a year ago, we were in St. Louis, and the movie Birth of a Nation. Unbelievable, unbelievable treatment of people, one race at the hands of another. And, you know, it's so pervasive and so bizarre as to be really classifiable as insane, and yet people still live in that world, not because of any natural tendency, but because of the brainwash of a culture. And I certainly join you in undoing that brainwash at every level inside of each of us and creating a world where we realize that we all are human and that we treat each other with dignity and respect. That it's time for that to be the pervasive energy of our culture and our world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I breathe with you on that.
Yeah, there were lots of film clips inside this documentary of early cowboy shows shooting up Indians and horses falling and all that stuff. And there were also clips of Ginger Rogers dancing with whoever her partner was, and the perfect white family, mother and father and young daughter and son, wife in high heels and an apron and hair all curled, standing at the gate of their white picket fence. And against the backdrop of the cruelty of people against blacks and injustices, this looked, talk about insanity. And in the clips, it was, I mean, in the film, they were also saying, we have created what we call the American dream, and it is sterile. We don't touch each other. We don't look at each other. We have no connection with each other. Our communities have broken apart. We are unhealthy. It's going on and on like that. And then in the comments after, one of the black women commentators said, you know,
was that based on a true story? Do you remember?
You're not muted.
Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
only in this country do we live that way, and not even all of us, not most of us. In any other country, this is this white picket fence, two washing machines, two cars in the garage. This is crazy, and no one lives this way in the whole world. Michael, I hadn't thought about that either. My son is a doctor without borders. He went to Bangladesh for 10 days to work with health issues in Bangladesh, and he was texting us from there saying, I am just sick at the poverty. I use the same bloody sheet for every operation. We have no other sheets. It's not clean. But he said, these people are so happy. They are just, they have nothing, and they are so happy. What is wrong with us? He came home completely turned around. He even stopped practicing medicine for a year and a half and has just gone back into a practice where people can see, where the doctors can see a patient for as long as the patient needs to take in the whole person, not just the isolated appendix or whatever it is. Anyway, that's a digression. But just the fact that we have brainwashed ourselves so much that we are blind. We've become blind.
Well, it's what you're describing, exactly what I started out talking about with perception, that we hold these thoughts and these thoughts turn into a world of pictures, and we're shocked when we confront the actuality of it.
Yeah.
Which is what I hear you describing has happened with your son. There are a couple of other films out there that, you know, on the whole topic, not necessarily oriented toward the black community in particular, that you might want to watch. There was one in the theaters recently called Wind River. And it's about the rape of a young girl and murder of a young girl on a Native American reservation. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember, that's what I was just asking Jeannie. I thought my mute button was on. She's on the other side of the room, whether it was based on a true story or not. But it did end up, and Jeannie's checked on the internet, and it doesn't say whether it's a true story or not, but it did end up, the last line in the film was that no one keeps statistics on missing Native American women in America.
No.
Today, current events.
Really? Really?
You know, it's exactly the same as nobody keeps statistics on the number of people murdered by police because nobody wants to know. It's kept hidden. And these are all things that, you know, each of us needs to confront in consciousness and open up our own minds to the error thinking that creates a world of perception that says, oh, well, that's all okay because it's not happening to us. And to change the game, another film that Jeannie and I watched a couple of years ago that was very powerful was called The Lost Boys of the Sudan.
Oh, yeah.
And these are young kids who watched their parents being slaughtered and literally walked hundreds of miles with bare feet in order to escape. And what happened to them when they were brought to the United States? It's like we can hardly conceive of such things because we've been given this thought structure of this American dream, which sadly in a lot of cases is quite a nightmare if we confront the actuality of it, which of course just means we need to clean up our minds and clean up our thinking and then take the action to clean up our actions and our world, to get the game back on track with real human life, with what we're really designed for.
Amen.
So I certainly join with you in that as an ongoing project to clean up, to open the space and deal with. And I don't think it's any accident you're having all of these conversations in the context of the original dream that you were shown, the memory of this manta ray.
Yeah.
It all ties into exactly the same
parts
of the mind.
It sure does.
Yeah. No accidents. And I wonder if Dr. Tim has any thoughts to share. It's a pretty pretty intense and deep topic.
My thought is to just keep breathing. And for me, you know, we each have to do what our minds, our brains, our culture and training would gear us to do. So for me, when the conversations go in this direction, I watch my breathing, I watch what comes up, and I keep myself focused as possible on the loving nature of everyone that I can, and removing the fear, the tension, the upset that comes up when people, as they often do, and they've been doing, by the way, ever since I was in grade school. I remember hearing things about how the world is falling apart and just doom and gloom, and there was a generation gap in the 60s and then in the 70s and then in the 80s. And whenever that happens, I used to go on the roller coaster ride of of the doom and the gloom and the panic and the fear. But since being introduced to tools like this, and for about 10 or 15 years before I met Michael's work, other tools that let me take full responsibility for what I'm generating inside. So I sit and listen to this, and I take breaths, and I do the EFT tapping, and I let that energy flow, and I just think about where I might make a loving difference in my life with whom I'm going to interact in the next moment. I'm leaving this internet show in a few minutes, and I'm going into a session, and what I will be doing is breathing and saying, how can I connect with the person who's in front of me, and how can I extend love in this interaction? And that is the most effective, powerful change agent I have that I know of in this physical realm. And that's where my thoughts go when these conversations come up.
Fantastic. That is fantastic. That is so helpful, because it looks so big that the temptation is to fall back and to go numb and into denial again. But what you said, we can do that. That's fabulous. Thank you, Dr. Kim.
Well, it comes straight out of Way of Mastery, where it says, you know, one way to think about it is you're a conduit for the energy of creation. You are the extension of love in form in this physical realm. And so one of the admonitions in that is you can choose to teach only love in each moment. And how do you teach love? You be love in each moment.
Yep.
And that's the core message of the Way of Mastery, and of course at many levels, A Course in Miracles, and that's where my thoughts go.
Thanks.
And the Course in Miracles takes it actually one little step further. It not only says teach only love, but then it says for that is what you are. Keeps the information going about the truth of us as human beings. And the restoration
and
of human life is the key.
Yeah, Mastery, Way of Mastery says you are the extension of love in form.
Hey, I'll join you in that.
You guys, this is so good. All these beautiful radio shows. Woo.
We are blessed.
Yep.
We are blessed. Well, we're down to the last minute or so, and so I'll just say thank you for being here, and we'll hold the space for an awesome weekend for everybody. We're actually going to play tourist a little bit for the next day or two as we kind of just catch up with ourselves, and we'll hold the space that everyone has the best year yet of your eternal lives. It's an awesome gift to create that and give it to the world. And blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes, and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.